Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. What a busy Monday live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We are on Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, Colin right, Colin wrong. Have to be honest, we had trouble finding the wrongs this week. It was like an avalanche of me being right. That was great. Joy Taylor is joining me, looking as festive and beautiful as ever. How are you, Joy?
Thank you. I'm trying to be festive. It's Christmas week.
It is.
It's here.
So I'm working a couple days. You're working more days. Goulet, we don't give Goulet days off. He just works every day. So it's great to have you in. We got a lot to talk about today.
Yes.
Including Dabo Swinney's doing some gamesmanship that I find hysterically funny. I want to start with this. Listen, sometimes you want something to happen so badly that you convince yourself it's going to happen before it happens. And it skews your judgment. The Patriots were so boring and dominant for 20 years. Everybody wants the next dynasty to be fun and flashy and cool and hip. And that. I get it. Like, I get that last Patriots Super Bowl win over the Rams, I was bored. And I live in L.A., and I'm a Patriot guy. But just because you want something to happen doesn't mean it's true. I'm watching this Kansas City team. Don't forget, they trailed by at least 10 points in all three playoff games last year, and were outplayed by the Niners for three of the four quarters. And the team I'm watching right now, I mean, they're winning six straight wins, 6 points or fewer, NFL record. And they've gotten some breaks. How in God's name was that game close yesterday? How was it a three-point game? Drew Brees early was awful. They had no running game. They had 15 first downs. The Saints never had the ball. I've never seen a lopsided time of possession, 42 minutes to 18. The Saints were terrible on third down. Their best receivers were all gone. Drew Brees is coming back. It looked like it hurt to throw. And in the end, that's a three-point game. Again, people forget this. We all live in the moment. Through 11 weeks last year, that's 60% of the season, 65%. Kansas City was 7-4. The defense was not top 10. I think Mahomes was like 15 in passer rating. He'd been hobbled. He hadn't been playing efficiently, consistently. It was a 7-4 football team. Then they got healthy. Mahomes and Andy Reid click. Passer rating goes up. Defense plays well. And they play really well. Although, and when I say this with Kansas City, I say it with affection and love. They're more fun than New England. They're flashier. They're faster. But they leave a lot of points on the floor. That game should never have been close. Drew Brees was mostly awful early. No receivers, couldn't run, 15 first downs, never had the ball. I mean, I look at these numbers this morning. Drew Brees is 15 for 34, 1 for 11 on third, 18 minutes time of possession, 15 first downs, couldn't run the ball. Against Kansas City, and that thing's a three-point game? You know, everybody always says, you are what your record is. No, if that's true, then the Pittsburgh Steelers would be dominant. You're not always what your record is. Sometimes we see it in college football. You have a great record because of weak opposition. And let's be honest, the division they're in is not great. Chargers don't have the right coach. Denver doesn't probably have the right quarterback. Raiders don't have the right defense. I don't know. I look at the AFC right now, and there are some trouble spots for the Chiefs. The Titans, the Cleveland Browns, the Ravens, and the Colts. Ravens aren't in yet, but four teams that have really profound running games. What does that mean? That Patrick Mahomes sits on the sideline and watches the football game. I could absolutely see the Titans and Derrick Henry dominating time of possession, and Mahomes doesn't get the ball. I could see Cleveland doing it with that offensive line, best in the NFL. I could see the Colts doing it. I could see the Colts doing to Kansas City what the Colts did to Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers is a spectator. But I understand wanting, after 20 years of dominance in a sport we all love, wanting something new. Okay. And not only wanting something new, But wanting something fun and flashy, it doesn't work this way in the NBA. The way it usually works in the NBA is flashy wins. The Warriors were flashy, and the Heatles were flashy, and Shaq Kobe was flashy, and Magic was flashy. And then you occasionally get kind of a defensive-minded, boring team. The Sonics in the 70s, the Pistons one time. You know, you get the occasional, like, kind of boring. In football, Alabama's boring, and New England was boring, and I get we all want fun. But, man, I find Kansas City incredibly vulnerable, and I know their record's great. But that game should never have been even marginally competitive if you kind of look at what transpired over 3.5 hours. All right, speaking of now, so the Rams lost to the New York Jets. I you know, it was funny. These games were on at the same time. And I couldn't keep my eyes off the Rams-Jets. It was just a dumpster fire. It was a tire fire on the side of the road. You couldn't stop looking at it. And it's really interesting. So I was texting a couple of personnel people in the NFL as we're talking about the Trevor Lawrence thing, and they're texting me back and they're like, God, this is months of content for you. This is crazy. So here's the thing. Trevor Lawrence for Clemson is now not going to go to the Jets probably, right? All these personnel people have been telling me for 3 years. He would have gone number one as a freshman. He would have been the number one pick 3 years ago. He would have been drafted out of high school. Somebody put him on a scout team. He was that good. The gap between him, and you've watched him play this year, and Justin Fields is huge. And Justin Fields is good. But this is John Elway. This is Andrew Luck. And we don't make that commentary very much on quarterbacks. We never talked about a quarterback out of college like John Elway before John Elway. I never talked about a college quarterback like Andrew Luck before Andrew Luck. Okay, this is the third quarterback in my life that's a can't miss, will overcome even average to mediocre coaching, right? Bad coaching, he'll overcome it. Justin Fields will not. So this morning, the Jets have a dilemma on their hands. What do we do with the number two pick? Because, like, the Jets already have two firsts, a second, and two thirds. So if you look at who is drafting now in the top 15 picks, I think there's four teams that will strongly consider getting a quarterback. And Joey and I will tell you this over and over. The closer you get to the draft, the crazier the teams get about quarterback. Like, remember, we're always talking ourselves out of quarterbacks. And then Jordan Love, the Packers move up to get him. That's just the way the draft works. Is that people go crazy. They move up to get quarterbacks. And the closer you get to a draft, so it's like everybody's wedding. Oh, let's not spend too much money. The closer you get to the wedding, well, we don't want to have a bad photographer. And you got to have flowers. Pretty soon when you look up, you got a gigantic bill. Weddings and drafts. The closer you get, the more you spend. So you look at this. Carolina at four. Could move up and give the Jets. They'll give them like a first-round pick or more. Then you go down, okay, Falcons may not. Dolphins have two. Eagles won't draft another quarterback. Cowboys won't. Chargers won't. Giants won't. Lions. San Francisco would. Denver's going to consider it. Minnesota, New England. So I think four out of 15 teams, Patriots, Vikings, Broncos, Carolina, maybe nine, maybe five, they're going to get a quarterback. And that mean, and they're going to spend something for it. I mean, hell, the Jets gave up 3 second-round picks, I think it was, to get a quarterback in Sam Darnold, right? So the Jets already have all these picks. They're going to get multiple picks. Sam Darnold is still cheap. And now the job, because you're not getting Trevor Lawrence, is not as attractive. You're not going to get Urban Meyer now. You're not going to get an Urban Meyer, even if it's an Ohio State quarterback. You're not going to get Urban Meyer for Justin Fields and Sam Darnold. You're not going to get Lincoln Riley. You're not going to get Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator for the Bills. He's going to have his choice of jobs. It's not as attractive a job now. So are you sure I'm going to go with Justin Fields, who I've watched play four times this year, and three of four, I'm like, Ohio State's got way better personnel than Northwestern. I'm not sure. And my personnel people are saying, there's no guarantees with Justin Fields. Big question. You're not going to get as good a coach. The Jets can get more picks, keep Darnold, got a capable GM. What if somebody gave you a first and a second, and now you have the Jets? Three firsts and two seconds. And two thirds, and then you get another number one next year, or somebody gives you a first and a starting corner who's a high level player. I talked to one GM yesterday who said, I wouldn't want a ton of picks. I'd want one great pick and a starter somewhere. I don't want too many. I don't want to have eight guys and give my new head coach eight kids. I wouldn't mind having like a starting great corner and a first round pick so you can move up nine spots. So the world's changed on this thing. I think it's a big gap between, all right, Trevor Lawrence, you're going to get an Urban Meyer-level guy, or a Brian Daboll, a great coordinator. That's a different conversation than Justin Fields, Sam Darnold. Sam's still cheap. A lot of cap space. A bunch of picks with Sam. The new GM, Joe Douglas, had a very good draft last year. Can he do it again? I don't know. I think I start looking around and everything changed. Maybe the Jets won't have leverage. Maybe Carolina says, we're not willing to do what you want to do. We'll stay with Teddy Bridgewater. We're almost winning with Teddy now with a bad defense and a rebuild. So I thought it was more than just losing Trevor Lawrence. I think it became a massive dilemma for the New York Jets. This morning, what would I do? I think I'd keep Sam Darnold. If somebody came and gave me a starting high-end corner to solve one of my problems, and I got another first-round pick and a third, and that's what somebody's going to do. I mean, folks, I was looking at this morning. Philadelphia gave up 5 picks 4 years ago to move up. You're kidding yourself if you don't think an NFL team, as we get close to the draft, is not going to move up and give 3 or 4 picks. This is we've watched this over and over and over again. They're going to start fight. Listen, if you don't have a quarterback in this league, Bill Belichick lost again. If you don't have the right guy at quarterback, Belichick got fired. Belichick's won 43% of his games. So to me this morning, I think I keep Sam Darnold. Get more picks. Keep building the fortress up. And then in 1 year, if Darnold's not what you think, you've rebuilt the O-line. You got a starting corner. You got multiple picks. I mean, that's the way I look at it. Unless somebody just, you know, you tell me. Am I nuts on this? Justin Fields, you watched him against Northwestern. I'm not rebooting the franchise for that. Now, if he comes out this week against, you know, in 10 days or whatever, against Clemson, and Justin Fields chops it up and chops Clemson up, maybe I have a different opinion. This morning, I keep Darnold. That's what I do. I keep Darnold.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Baker Mayfield's rolling. So the media doesn't like to be criticized. They don't like it. They like to sit up in their lofty perches. And I have a lofty perch too, but I'm willing to go out there, have an opinion, and you take shots at me. It's been my whole career. I don't spend a lot of time worrying about what social media thinks of me. Most of my comments, I don't care what my bosses think of me. This is what I am. I lay it out. Some like me, some don't. I'm good with it, right? I work hard. We work hard. But the media tends to play it safe because they don't want pushback. So when guys like me came out, and there's only a couple in the country, that we said, Baker's better without OBJ. Oh, the pushback was like, whoa, are you so stupid, idiotic? You know what you're talking about. It is ridiculous to... It's not ridiculous at all. Have you ever had somebody in your life that you try to impress? A big brother? A boss? You know, you're trying to impress somebody. Baker Mayfield walks into this league, young quarterback. Here comes superstar OBJ. I mean, superstar. Best catch we've ever seen. New York Giants. Supermodels in Paris. And Baker, through no fault of his own or no fault of OBJ, is overcompensating. He's trying to feed the ball to OBJ. And what Baker's really good at is what you see now, a point guard. He's not the biggest guy, the best arm, the best athlete, but he's throw the ball accurately, mix it up, no pressure on Baker, find the open guy, hit him. He's a point guard now. So before OBJ got hurt, there was a play that Baker was throwing to him and OBJ got hurt. Since that play, when OBJ was not available, 15 touchdowns, 1 pick. With OBJ, 10 touchdowns, 7 picks. His passer rating with OBJ was 80. Without it, it's MVP stuff. It's Aaron Rodgers, 112. Now, I don't think Baker is Aaron Rodgers. But the point being is, it is not ridiculous or a hot take to suggest that a young quarterback, Dak with Dez, Baker with OBJ, is influenced by a wide receiver that is a star, established in the league, a home run threat, and you want to appeal to him. You want to curry favor like Dak with Dez or Baker with OBJ. I'm not pointing fingers and blaming people. But we've all had a big brother we try to impress, or a boss, or a coworker, or a woman, or a date we're trying to impress. It's natural. It's human. But Baker Mayfield's passer rating without OBJ is 112. That's Aaron Rodgers. So it's just he's a better quarterback. And the organization has been denying this OBJ trade thing. I've been on this thing for 2 years saying, move OBJ. He never wanted to be there. It doesn't fit. Do not put this burden on Baker Mayfield, who is clearly pressing to get the ball to OBJ. And it's not a hot take. It's not even disputable. And by the way, Baker's current numbers are actually depressed, because Baker had to play two games at home in Cleveland in tsunamis. Remember that game against the Raiders when it was like 40-mile-an-hour winds? You couldn't land planes in Cleveland? He played two or three straight games at home where Baker couldn't throw the ball. The weather dictated it. So Baker's numbers would be better without OBJ. And when he had OBJ, he was throwing in better weather. Now he's throwing in worse weather, and his numbers are through the roof. It's not a hot take. It's the reality of humans. We're all trying to impress somebody. And young quarterbacks are vulnerable to star receivers who come with either an entourage or a reputation or an ego. Or this is not a point fingers blame. It's a reality. Baker's simply a red-hot point guard who now can throw to anybody without overthinking who he has to throw to.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Well, to me, he's one of the top two or three coaches of my lifetime, the Bill Walshes, the Belichicks, the Jimmy Johnsons, and he joins me a couple times a year, and I always feel very fortunate. Fox Sports NFL analyst, a Hall of Famer, long overdue when he got it, and he's joining me from the Keys, where he always looks rested and comfortable. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Okay, Coach. Good Lord, the Jets can't even lose, right, Jimmy? They can't even figure out how to lose. So now, Jimmy, you got the number two pick. And there's a difference between Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. Do you start over with Fields, or do you keep Darnold and take those picks and rebuild? What would you do?
Yeah, Colin, I don't know that Justin Fields is that big an upgrade over Sam Darnold. I still think that Sam Darnold's got talent. I question how he's been coached the last few years and the supporting cast. But I'd like to see better players around Sam Darnold and use some of those picks to bring in players. Now, you might even, take that number two pick and get you a bonanza,
right,
as far as people moving up trying to get Justin Fields or another great player. So you can add to your arsenal by trading that pick to a team that's desperate.
Do you think, Jimmy, you'd never want to move up to get a quarterback if you were a Belichick or a good team, and then you don't move up far enough and somebody jumps you. So do you think the people that are interested in a quarterback and calling the Jets, do you think they'll do it now early, or they'll wait until draft day? What would you suspect would happen?
I think they would wait until late, because, the price just goes up the closer you get to the draft. You get other teams, bidding. Now, obviously, that's as far as the Jets are concerned. If you're one of the teams wanting to move up, if you can solidify a deal right now, then that's fine, because it's going to be cheaper than if you wait until the draft.
Okay.
You get teams competing for that pick, the price is going to go up.
Jimmy, I'm watching Kansas City, and you had three or four great all-time teams in the NFL. You had several in college. And I said, I know your record's important, but I look at when you get closer to the playoffs, I start looking at stuff like red zone stats. Are you situationally good? And I look at Kansas City, and I can see him facing a Derrick Henry or a Cleveland offensive line or the Colts, and I can see that Patrick Mahomes sitting on the sideline watching the game. I do think they're really vulnerable. Do you?
I was asked on the show yesterday as far as who's the biggest threat to Kansas City. And, you might say, well, Buffalo, because Buffalo's really hot right now. Their quarterback is playing great. You might say Tennessee, because of the way they run the football and they can control the clock, control the game. But I think the biggest threat to Kansas City is really Kansas City. Brett Veach, you know, I talked to him just not too long ago. He wanted me to autograph a picture that we took when they were here at the Super Bowl with Brett and Andy Reid. And I told him, I said, "Yeah, you are looking great." He said, "As long as we stay healthy," he said, "we'll be fine." And that's what I believe. If they're healthy and if they're prepared and if they're not overconfident, if they understand who they're playing and the strength of their opponent, they'll be fine. They're the best. They're the most talented team in the NFL. And when you have a quarterback like that, Terry Bradshaw called me this morning. He said, I watched Mahomes. He said, "It's unbelievable some of the throws that he makes and some of the things he does. He's just such a special talent."
Yeah. So I watched the Miami Dolphins yesterday, a franchise you coached in an area and a team, and you know a lot of people in that organization. And I got to tell you, Jimmy, Brian Flores, this team reminds me of Belichick early in New England with Brady. They win a lot of 2016 ugly. They're resourceful.
Yep.
Yesterday, they were missing four of their top five scrimmage yard performers. Players become more replaceable. And Tua, like an early Brady, is coachable. He doesn't turn the ball over. I think we got a hit. Maybe am I being a little hyper here, but I think Brian Flores, I watch him. Jimmy, I see Belichick.
Yeah, I spent some time with him this offseason, and I was thoroughly impressed. Their team, you know, they play so hard. You know, he gets tremendous effort out of his players. He's got a bunch of young guys, a lot of players that nobody's ever heard of.
Right.
That are really performing. And he's getting the most out of his players. And, you know, that's what Bill did in his great run is, you know, a lot of the players that, you know, other teams might not even want, he made them productive. He was able to utilize, you know, certain guys that could do maybe one thing, and he could put them in the ball game and let him do that one thing. And so Brian, you know, he learned well from Bill. And then on the other side, that's going to be a struggle up there at New England. But now, you know, New England's got a bunch of cap money. They've got some opt-outs that are going to be coming back next year, but they still got to find them a quarterback.
Yeah, and they're not very dynamic on the offensive side, at least on the perimeter. They could use some speed. So I said this, and I said this about 2 years ago. I said sometimes young quarterbacks come into this league, and if they have a star receiver, it feels like they feel like they need to appeal to him. And I totally get, I'm not blaming anybody. But I watch Baker without OBJ. Jimmy's like a different player. Did you ever have a situation like that?
No. Michael Irvin wanted it to be like that, but I wouldn't let him. I made sure that Troy threw the ball other places. Yeah, you know, and I heard what you said about Baker, and yes, a lot of it is on Baker as far as when he had OBJ, but also the play caller. You know, the play caller is going to design plays for his star receiver. Well, the only thing is the opponent knows that as well. And so they're going to do some things to take away your star receiver. You know, if you actually just take the approach, especially if you have balance with your receivers and your tight end, if you take the approach, you just take what the defense gives us and not try to force the ball to any one player, you're going to be much better off. And that's what we're seeing with Baker Mayfield.
Should a team like, did you ever have a great team that had a bad late season loss? Like, I like the Rams a lot. That's a clunker yesterday. Should I take, you know, the early in the season, the Colts lost to the Jags, but it's September, it's week one. I don't worry. They're a different team. Do late season losses concern you, Jimmy?
No, but I'll give you an example. The last loss that I ever had in Dallas was, you know, really a heartbreaker. You know, we were playing the Miami Dolphins in the snow, and you know, of course, you know the game.
Yeah.
The Leon Lett, you know, touches the field goal, and we had the better team. We were favored. We were at home, but because of the snow and because of the mistake that we made in the kicking game, we lost the game. But that was the last loss that I ever had in Dallas. We went right ahead and won the rest of the season, won every game, and won the Super Bowl. So I think you can bounce back from that. I mean, I mean, I don't think the Rams look at this loss to the Jets and say, oh, we've got a bad team. It's just one of those things that happened. Hey, let's rally back. Let's correct our mistakes. We're a good football team, and let's go forward.
As a coach, finally, Jimmy Johnson, the Hall of Famer, there are some things, Jimmy, that are correctable. And then I wonder if there are mistakes that you just know as a coach, we just don't have the personnel. I look at Pittsburgh. They play tonight, right? And I say to myself, Jimmy, Ben, because of that surgery, can't throw the ball deep. I don't think it's correctable. I don't think people fear him going over the top. I think it's hurting their running game. Now, that's my perception. Is that a correctable flaw? Are there things as a coach you just tell your coaches, not publicly, guys, this is what we are right now?
I don't think that they can accept that. You know, I looked at the Steelers back before they lost the last couple of games, and every route was a four-yard route. You know, everything was underneath, and it was a dink and dunk, you know, to get rid of the ball in 2 seconds. And, you know, I said before they even lost games, I said, you know, teams that are talented, they're going to crowd those receivers. They're not going to let them throw those little 4 and 5 yard routes and those bubble screens. And if they do that, then they're going to have a running game, or they're going to have to throw it deep. I think, you know, as far as the coaching staff with the Steelers, they've got to force the ball deep. You know, they've got to force, you know, I mean, even if it's less than 3 yards a carry, they've got to run the football. You know, they cannot just go into every game saying we're going to throw 3 and 4 yard routes and win the game. You get up against good teams in the playoffs, that's not going to work. So they've got to have some balance offensively.
Jimmy
Johnson.
Oh,
by the way, I got a pretty good two of my favorite players right here.
Who? Who?
Oh, Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas.
Look at your handsome brother.
I noticed it right away.
You noticed it?
Jimmy's family.
Jimmy's family. I love that. Coach, great seeing you. Have a great holiday, Jimmy.
Okay. Merry Christmas, Colin. Joy.
All right. Well, Jimmy's kind of with me on this. Is that Sam Darnold, Justin Fields?
I mean, he's right. I mean.
I think I just built
that game did not do Justin Fields any favors.
No, and maybe against Clemson, we all go, okay. But it's like the gap between Justin and Sam, wouldn't I rather just keep Sam, build a fortress of picks, and if Sam stinks next year, it's just 1 year in the big picture, then you go get another guy, and then the next kid, the coach, the new coach, gets to pick who he wants for a system, and it's a better group of players.
I mean, it's not going to sound sexy to Jets fans, but it's probably the more prudent thing to do.
Right.
But this all hinges on how he plays in this.
It really does. Like, if he throws up a stinker, let's say Clemson rolls Ohio State, I think the Jets are like, we're keeping Sam Darnold. I think you would.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So let's do it. Let's do our Colin right, Colin wrong on a Monday. Here we go.
Where Colin was right.
Blazing 5-4-1. Third winning week in a row. We picked Miami to beat New England. We said Arizona was going to beat the Eagles. We picked Washington to keep it close but lose. And we got a little lucky on New Orleans late. So for the first time this year, we are over 500. I've never had a losing season. This means a lot to me. 37-36-2. And I'll sprinkle in a couple picks over the weekend.
Where Colin was wrong.
I remember when Josh Allen got drafted, of the 5 quarterbacks in the first round, I said, he's got the biggest bust potential. Yeah, that's not happening. He may be the 3rd best quarterback in the league. He is on fire. First of all, in college, in his rookie year, he was just inaccurate. Like below bad. Now he completes 69% of his throws. Folks, do you understand what he did this weekend? He dropped 48 points on one of the best defensive coaches in the NFL on the road, off a win over the Steelers. 48 on Vic Fangio, who is absolutely one of your top 5 or 6 defensive minds in the NFL. He ain't Belichick, but he's really good. And this thing, they had stuff called back. This kid is absolutely on fire. I never thought this early he would be this good. Some of it's coaching, but I was wrong.
Where Colin was right.
3 weeks ago, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens lost back-to-back games to New England, Tennessee. Everybody bailed. Not Uncle Colin. I doubled down and said, Lamar's the best athlete in the league. He wins a lot. He's young. Give him time. Since those losses, he's 3-0, 6 passing touchdowns, 4 rushing touchdowns, 120 passer rating, and completing 71% of his throws. And by the way, the Jags have played a lot of good teams close. That thing was a beatdown yesterday. Here's my takeaway on Lamar. Not everything has to look the same to be successful. The dude wins 78% of his games. And he's younger than Joe Burrow. He's never going to be Mahomes from the pocket. But I got to tell you this, 99% of the players that have ever played it can't run that offense. And he's accurate enough to win 78% of his games. I like him.
Where Colin was wrong.
I whiffed on the Vikings. I mean, good. I had them winning their division. They're a mess. They made Mitch Trubisky look like, Favre yesterday. David Montgomery ate him up. I like Mike Zimmer. Kirk Cousins is capable. But they're just not right. Now, some of it is injuries and free agent losses on the defensive side. And so they weren't going to be as good defensively. Yesterday, they were atrocious. And they have some bad losses. I mean, the Dallas loss was bad. To Andy Dalton, they got blown out by Atlanta. So you guys think I missed on my Steeler pick. This is actually my worst pick. And I like this organization. I completely whiffed. I thought the Vikings would win their division and win playoff games.
Where Colin was right.
I always tell you with Jared Goff, comfortable, you ain't beating him. Uncomfortable, watch out. Yesterday was classic golf. Jets put pressure on him. No quarterback in the NFL, except Baker Mayfield, goes from good to bad with pressure like Goff. In a clean pocket, his passer rating is 102, 107. In a under pressure, it's 46. And yesterday is the prime. This is why I wouldn't touch this game, because the Jets have a very good run defense, and I thought, just stay away from this game. This has, like, ugly Ram performance. And yesterday, this is what Goff is. And I like Goff, but this is why they have to address their offensive line. Under pressure, he is very, very weak. With composed, he's like a Pro Bowler. He throws a beautiful ball. But this is what Goff has become, and it's fairly predictable.
Where Colin was right.
The Jonathan Taylor draft pick by the Colts. I went on Instagram yelling and screaming. I love the pick. I thought it was one of the best second-round picks ever. He's become the dog. Now, it's taken a while. Early in the season, we didn't have a preseason. Joy and I talked about this. You can't judge rookies the same. They're going to be lost in September. But in the last four games, he's got four rushing touchdowns. He's now a top 10 rushing back in the NFL. I loved him at Wisconsin. He's a Burns, a track guy. He can run. He's powerful. He can make you miss. I said he was the best back out of the Big Ten since Zeke. I think he's comparable to Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley's a little flashier. I think this kid's an absolute home run. It's just no preseason. It took him 8-9 weeks to get in this coaching staff into the groove. But what a pick and what a player this kid is.
Where Colin was wrong.
Well, 3 weeks ago, I had John Gruden coach of the year. Since then, he's lost 4 of 5. And let's be honest, the Raiders are now consistently a bad December team. I mean, you're talking losing to Atlanta by 37, losing to Tampa by 25. I don't have the answer for it, but you can go back even to his Tampa days. Something about what Gruden does, is it the kind of corrosive quarterback relationship thing? I don't know what the answer is, but I jumped the gun. They are a bad December football team. There's no other way around it, and that's on the coach. Well-coached teams get better late, not worse.
Where Colin was right.
I said when the Seahawks went and acquired Carlos Dunlap from the Bengals, I said that kid's been buried for years. Long athletic. He's going to solve Seattle's big problem. Well, he's been terrific. In fact, since Jamal Adams came back from injury and Carlos Dunlap has arrived, Seattle's defense, I think, is top two in the NFL. He's got 4.5 sacks in 6 games. He is super athletic. And you know what? When you watch him play, he plays like a young player. A lot of defensive linemen's motors are hit and miss. Dunlap's one of those guys where he is going constantly. He's a good kid and a great player in a bad franchise. And this happens. He just got buried and it didn't work, but he has been exactly what Pete Carroll and John Schneider thought he was going to be. He has resurrected a bad pass rush into one of the top 4 or 5 pass rushes in the NFL.
Where Colin was right.
Jimmy Garoppolo, say what you want. He won in college. He won in New England. He wins in San Francisco. The Niners with Kyle Shanahan, who we acknowledge is a great coach. They're now 2-6 this year without Jimmy Garoppolo. Got to the Super Bowl with him. Kyle Shanahan, a great coach, has won 6 NFL games as a coach without Jimmy Garoppolo, 6-26. And I think we all understand that starting quarterback, backup quarterback, there is a gap. But one of the things I like about Garoppolo, he's not into stats, he's kind of a winning player, is that he'll make mistakes, but he'll just let it rip. He's not a guy that hesitates in his body language. Maybe it's because he's such a good-looking kid. He's always had confidence. He plays with a lot of confidence. Now, when he struggles, Kyle Shanahan just takes the ball out of his hands. But he's never been a kid affected by a loss, affected by a pick. He comes out, lets it rip, and he is they lost to Dallas yesterday without Jimmy Garoppolo and had four turnovers.
Where Colin was right.
Finally, a lot of rights this week. Everybody wants a college football playoff. And I've always said, folks, it doesn't matter. If we have four, you'll complain about two that didn't make it. If we have eight, you'll complain about 9 and 10. So now Ohio State gets in, and everybody wants A&M and Oklahoma in. It doesn't matter. In college basketball, they let in, what, 68 teams? And Dick Vitale and Jay Billis are screaming about, you know, some directional school, 69. Everybody always feels like, as big as the country club is, the person that doesn't get in thinks he's being jobbed, robbed, or treated poorly. The college football playoff has never been this magic elixir to solve the problems. You still complain about one of the teams not getting in. I don't care who gets in at number four. It doesn't matter. You're just signing up to get your arse kicked by Alabama. Notre Dame's a 20-point underdog. A&M would be a 17, 18-point underdog. Oklahoma, and I think Lincoln Riley's great, does not match up at all with Alabama. They don't. They couldn't stop them. So the college football rankings, I'm just fine with it. As long as you give me Ohio State, Bama, and Clemson, I don't care who the fourth is. It doesn't matter. They're all going to be huge underdogs to the three teams.